You have to forgive me now, too. I know normally I'm a big Windows PowerPoint fan. I think PowerPoint's probably one of the better presenters, but I'm really trying to do this whole open source thing. So I'm running out of OpenOffice Impress right now, and we'll see if I'm impressed with using the damn thing. But it's not going to look as pretty. It's going to be a little grainy and some, you know, JPEG artifacts. So I'm sorry for the lesser quality graphics here, but, you know, please just bear with me. And that's also why you're going to see the slide bars and stuff, too, because one of the stupid, annoying effects of OpenOffice is that you can't escape out of a presentation and resume at the same slide. It starts it over from the beginning. So that makes it hard to kind of bop out of the slides and into a demo and then come back into the, you know, in the middle back of the slideshow. So I'm trying to deal with it and work around it, but just bear with me. And hopefully, you know, it won't completely suck. So, huh? Haven't missed anything yet. So, of course, you know, if you haven't figured it out yet, you're at the Novell, the Forgotten OS, and I am RFP, and this is Black Hat 2002, in case you forgot. One thing I do want to mention right off the bat, too, is they're trying to do some feedback form stuff. I doubt most of you will hop online and do that. So I would like to actually request that during the talk, if you find something I do really annoying or really cool or something like that, write it on the back of your business card. And at the end, if you can just, like, toss your business cards on the stage over here or just wing them at me or throw them and try to hit me in my eye or something, fine. But I want to use that as a relative kind of, like, feedback for me type thing, because, you know, I'm up here and I prance and dance and do weird stuff and take my clothes off and all these things, and I don't know if you guys like it or not. So it'd be really good just to know, you know, whether or not that, yeah, you want to see more nudity, or yeah, please keep your clothes on. So, you know, let me know one way or another, and if you could do it like that. And then I get the bonus of getting your name and email, maybe dropping an email and stuff and doing some more talking offline or after the show and things like that. Or sending pictures, yes. I get lots of requests for the original slide backgrounds and the, you know, all the original graphics, too. So, you know, if you want those, just email me. That's Melissa, or Alyssa Milano, in case you guys don't know. So, and this slide is obviously very different than what's actually printed in your big book. Why? Because this slideshow was made a couple weeks ago because all these problems are relatively new. So you don't have the print on the slides. You can get it online from my website and also be given to the Black Hat website. For those of you not aware of what my website is, it's right there at wiretrip.net. All right, so let's start. Little introduction. This talk is going to be network-centric. You'd think from the title that, you know, we're not going to be talking about Windows all that much. It's going to be basically dealing with all the web problems that are found in default Novell installations. All this stuff is turned on. And there, I'm not going to really be focusing on anything non-web related. I like the web, that's my playground, and that's what I know the best. And there's lots of areas, lots of web-related things to play with, too, so it's enough to have a whole speech about. And, of course, a lot of these are publicly unknown, you know, quote-unquote zero-day. I mean, while Novell knows about them, some other people know about them in some capacity, but it's still not public. You know, there are underground people. I just found out last night that one of the bigger problems in my presentation, I guess, was talked about on some private mailing list, like, in the past week. I think in response to the fact that I announced that I'm having a Novell talk, they went and found the same bugs and stuff. But, I mean, generally, these problems are not publicly known. So, you know, it'll be news to hopefully most of the crowd. The whole five NetWare admins are actually in the crowd. You guys raise your hand if you actually use NetWare. So... All right, so there's a couple. So, you know, you guys will probably do the whole Lotus Notes talk thing where at the end I show how bad it is and y'all run out and call home and, you know, tell them to fix the stuff right off the bat. So we'll see. And, of course, everything I mention here has workarounds. It's not like I'm going to do something devastatingly evil and then say, oh, and you're screwed. Just live with it. So you can fix all of this stuff on your own right off the bat. So it's not going to be horribly devastating, hopefully. Of course, why NetWare? Well, NetWare 6 actually has a bunch of new web-enabled services. NetWare's actually ditched, or I don't want to say ditched, but they're moving away from the IPX model and focusing more internally on the product using IP, Internet Protocol. So, you know, and there's a lot of web-enabled things like iFolder and some of the extra add-on service and stuff. So they're really embracing and adding more web-rich features into the OS. So it's actually, it's got a fair number of web stuff to actually look at. And, of course, I mean, I say they're using suspect components. They're using Perl CGIs. They're using Tomcat, Apache Tomcat Java servlets. And, you know, they're using all these Netscape Enterprise servers. So they're reusing the same components that have had security problems in other areas. So, you know, they're just as likely to have security problems in a Novell, whether regardless, really, if you run a Novell or Microsoft or Unix or whatever. So, but, you know, but they're using stuff that is suspect and is, you know, capable of having problems. So, you know, of course, we should actually look and see if it has problems, because no one seems to be doing, giving it just a really good thorough review. There are a couple people releasing a couple sample CGI problems came across in the last couple months, or they'll do a spot check, and I found this one little bug here, and I list one little bug there. It's kind of the whole PHP nuke syndrome, where every week you have yet another cross-site scripting problem posted about PHP nuke. You think if someone just sat down and enumerated all 300,000 found in PHP nuke and just stuck it in one advisory and said, okay, tons of stuff. But instead, I guess they're just going for the long-term exposure where they just do one a day for the next 3 years. So, you know, it'd be nice if someone just, They get paid more. More advertising. So, you know, it just, someone needs to just sit down and just, you know, whirlwind through and try to, you know, low-hanging fruit, whatever, but just get all this stuff out of the way rather than just doing this whole trickle. Oh, I found another one. Well, if you find a bug, you know, odds are they'll probably have the same type of bug elsewhere. There could be, so, you know, it's due diligence just to look and see if that bug reoccurs in the same form, you know, within the same product, you know, two lines later in the code. It doesn't take that much more effort. And, you know, just a little more thorough type of research. And, of course, NetWare is actually still common in the enterprise. I come across a lot of clients who actually still have it rolled out, particularly for directory services. You know, NDS is actually a pretty solid directory, and it has been for quite a long time. It's ported to lots of other platforms way before, you know, AD came along. And there's a lot of people not uprooting their NDS installs to replace it with AD, at least not with the clients I'm dealing with. So, I mean, it's still there, and it's in some places it's switched to a legacy type installations, but it still can be found. And that just reminded me to turn off my cell phone. but it can definitely still be found. So it's not like, you know, NetWare, who uses that anymore? No one. I mean, there were a couple people who raised their hands. There are people using it. So, and of course, some of the previous web vulns, I'm not going to go through and, you know, enumerate all these, but these are basically, I went through my little vuln database that I keep and grabbed everything that's web Novell related in the last 4 years, and that's pretty much it. A lot of group-wise stuff and some other various sample script problems. There were two buffer overflows, but, I mean, beyond that, not a whole lot. The NDS object browsing, that was actually done by NMRC a long time ago. So, yeah, some of that stuff dates back to, like, I think, 96. So it's pretty darn old. And, of course, what platforms I've actually looked at, a lot of these problems were found in the last 3 to 16 months on any platform, including NetWare 5.1, generic, like no support packs, then SP4 applied on 5.1, and, of course, 6.0. 6.0 eval, which is basically what was downloaded offline from Novell because I don't actually have a valid Netware 6 license. So maybe Novell will give me one. I don't know. We'll see. They might hate me after this talk, so who knows. But yeah, so I mean, I assume the eval version is close enough. It's live stuff. It just expires every couple of, you know, days, and I have to constantly reinstall. But for the most part, those are the platforms I'm looking at. I'm not looking at IntranetWare 4.0, 3.0, anything earlier. And I'm not really focused on, like, you know, the various layers of, you know, support packs in between 5.1 and 5.1 SP4. Just kind of like, you know, default with nothing, the default with the latest support pack, and then beyond. And there's actually not a whole lot of web fixes for SP4 beyond. I think there's one, and I did apply it. You know, but there are a couple updates beyond SP4, but nothing that really counts as far as, you know, this is concerned. So let's look at NetWare 6 out of the box. What I've done here is kind of diagrammed out. On the left, you see all the ports. These are all the ports that run a web server of some sort. And then, of course, you'll see then I grouped it and listed to exactly what web servers are listening on what ports. So, of course, you know, the 80 and 443, they run the Netscape Enterprise, which is also known as the NetWare Enterprise web server, originally ported from Netscape to Novell by a company called Novonix, which existed for relatively around 6 months. I think it was like mid-1996, Netscape and Novell spun off a sub-company called Novonix. And that was, okay, mid-1996. January 1997, January 17th, they announced that they actually had their first product, which was Netscape, you know, basically ported to Novell. And so that's January 17th. On January 23rd, Novell released their quarterly statement, said they're not doing as well, and also said that Novonix is going to be no more. They're going to be subsumed back into Novell. So the company existed for 6 whole months between 1996 and 1997. And actually, and to this day, they still use the term Novonix all over the place, too, which is really interesting. But, a little bit of history lesson there. So anyway, so the Netscape Enterprise server listens on 80 and 443. And then you have Apache. Now, Apache is a recent introduction into Netware 6. And you'll see there that it listens on port 2211. That's running the system manager. It's remote manager is what it's technically called. A lot of Netware admins will know this as like the let me back up here. I'm sorry, I'm getting confused. The 2200.2211 is web services manager. That manages all the various web services. The network stack listening on 8008 and 8009, that's the remote manager. That manages basically local system configuration and lets you actually pull up debuggers and stuff right over there over the web interface. So the network stack in 8000 actually deals with local system management. The stuff on 2200, that deals with web service management, managing all the basically the Netscape Enterprise Server Administrative Console rewritten and done into Apache, and plus managing things like iManage and I assume iFolder and a bunch of all the extra extended Novell web offerings, like their whole entire search engine thing that they have for the web platforms and stuff. But you see Apache, and then also listens in the 5500 or 55,000 port range up there. That's just the basic, plain vanilla. You know, you've installed Apache type stuff. I assume if I didn't install the Netscape or Netware Enterprise server, it would have stuck Apache up on port 80 and 443. But since the Netscape stuff is there, it sticks Apache on these other ports. But this is all default. The only box, I unchecked a lot of stuff, so I didn't install a whole lot of anything. And the only thing I added beyond default was I checked the box for Netware Enterprise Server. And then I just let it install, and I saw what it gave me. And so it gave me 9 web server listening ports. And, you know, a couple of them are doubled up because some are SSL and some are not. And you'll see the 81 actually just redirects to port 8008 and does a bunch of weird things. But, I mean, if you see 9 listening web server ports on a default install, I mean, that's a lot. If I would have installed iFolder, it would have given me 2 more. So, you know, up to 11 out of the box. And, of course, both Apache and Netscape have configs to feed into Apache Tomcat. For Netware 6, they use Tomcat for their servlet engine. For Netware 5.1, they use IBM WebSphere as an optional component for the servlet engine. So you see, there's lots of web servers running. And of course, you know, and each one has their all fun little configs and has different stuff loaded. It's so like, you know, for instance, the Netscape one. I mean, it has both servlets and anything .jsp is given off to the servlet engine, the Apache Tomcat. Anything in the SP directory, as well as ending with ASP or NSP, is given off to this NSN net basic scripting handler. Anything in the LCGI directory, it functions as a CGI bin. It's just basically precompiled CGIs and stuff. You know, those are programs to run. Anything in the NetBASIC directories and the NSN directories are yet more NetBASIC weird add-on script handlers. Then you have anything in the Perl directory. It has a bunch of, you know, Perl programs that you can run and do. The My Network thing is this whole weird user NDS browsing thing. It requires authentication, so, you know, I consider it safe enough. I'm not really going to touch on it. But that's yet another little dynamic handler thing that's going on. Then, of course, there's stuff going on in the WebDev directory, the tilde user directory, and the SC directories are even more handlers that this stuff does. The SC is SUSE, the SUSE scripting language and stuff. It actually isn't all the handlers that the web server is configured to actually run the handlers, but the handlers actually aren't shipped anymore with Netware 6. So they just left in this old config, but didn't actually ship the NLMs and, you know, the DLL equivalents to actually run the stuff. But if, you know, from the Microsoft world, because a lot of people are familiar with the Windows way of life, all of these are equivalent to all your IDA, IDC, IDQ, HDR, HTW, and all those extra handlers added in. Each one of these is exactly like that. And each one of these, you know, is capable of being prone to the same type of stuff you'd see, like in the IDC overflow and the IDA cross-site scripting and all that stuff. So you see there's a lot of dynamic handlers and stuff enabled, you know, by default beyond what's just normally happening in the normal server. This is all extra added extensions, all on by default. And, of course, on the Apache config, on all ports, all the servlet and the JSP requests, anything in the servlet directory ending in JSP, get fed off to the Apache Tomcat engine again. And then limited to only in the Apache config, but limited only to the 2200 port range is, again, anything in the ASP directory, ASP and SP pages are all NetBasic scripts. Anything in the Perl directory and anything ending in .pl is given to the Perl handler. And all the NSN and .bas basic scripts are, again, given to the NetBasic handler. So, you know, you got the Netscape, which has all those extra features loaded in. You got the Apache server running on more port, which have some of the more features loaded in. And so what else do we got? Well, we have the network stack. That's the remote manager. Now, of course, it requires authentication before you can even get at it. So pretty much, you know, assuming that an attacker doesn't have a valid username password to log in, it's relatively secure because they can't log in, they can't get to what's inside of it, so who cares what's loaded in it. And the only potential problem that could have is that if there's a vulnerability in the authentication mechanism. Which, of course, did happen. April 2002 report, buffer overflow, and the authentication method of the remote manager. So, you know, that's fixed now, and that's okay. But for the most part, I'm not going to deal with the HTTP stack and the remote manager just because, you know, hopefully it's to the point where people will be blocking that, turning it off. And even if the attacker could get to the port, they still need valid admin login credentials, which they won't have. So it's not worth talking about because there's a lot of other stuff anyway. So, okay, let's actually just jump right into the vulnerabilities. Enough about this background stuff. You guys are here for 0 days, so let's just give it to you. Feel the tension. So here's your 0 day. Cross-site scripting. Yeah, right. There's a bunch of little stuff to start off with. Let's just get it out of the way. env.pl, the lcgitest.nlm, the env.bs and the allfield.jsc. A lot of these are just similar to the standard Apache test CGI, which just spits out a bunch of environment variables. Those environment variables can have some path information and stuff. For the most part, it's an extremely light, really who cares type of problem. And I've started three of them. They were recently reported in the past months. One of those things where it's like I found this and I'm making the talk, and I'm hoping no one finds this stuff before I talk about it. And some people start releasing advisories, finding it independently. It's just like, damn, there goes another slide. Damn, there goes another slide. So, but for the most part, one of them wasn't discovered, but, you know, it's a really obvious one anyway. But the one thing that's interesting, or at least to keep in mind, any test CGI, anything that spits back environment variables is most likely going to be vulnerable to cross-site scripting. You know, and I gave an example down there on how that is. You just stick it in the URL parameter, and the web server will stick an environment variable, and the script will, you know, spew it back. So, like env.basic, the basic file I have displayed there, for example, not only is it great for cross-site scripting, you stick a script in it like that, it'll give it back to the client four times. So whatever you give, you know, whatever script you give it, it's definitely be thrown back at the browser in four different places. So it's definitely cross-site scripting. But, cross-site scripting, yeah, it is a problem, it isn't a problem, whatever. There is a talk about it that goes in a little more detail in some of the scenarios. It's a really unique niche type of exploit that you know, and it's really hard exploit avenue. But some people, you know, like to worry about it. So if you worry about it, then, you know, there you go. So let's get a little bit bigger. The NetBasic handler is pretty interesting. The way the NetBasic scripts are written is that in BASIC you have a bunch of subroutines. So you define your logic in your subroutines. And what it is when you call a NetBasic script, it just executes the main, literally the subroutine named main, and executes that subroutine. What's really interesting is that you can then call you can tell it to just execute different subroutines by using the colon in the subroutine name. So what's really interesting, particularly with the fdir.bas, the fdir.basic script requires you to log in via, you know, NDS username password. And once you give it username and password, then it lets you browse the volumes and the directories on those volumes, right? But you got to log in first. Well, because of this kind of weird quirk in NetBasic, you can just give the show volume and show directory subroutine names and skip that login crap and just go straight to enumerating all the volumes and all the directories and stuff and cruising the file system. This is the bug, and this is one of the really weird bugs because I'm not quite sure what's going on. This works great under NetWare 5.1. By the time I installed SP4 and even in 6.0, it's still there and it's still a NetBasic handler, but the script doesn't work anymore. And I'm not sure it doesn't work even in the proper context anymore. Now, I don't know if they fixed the NetBasic handler to remove this bug, but then also broke all the scripts in the process and didn't bother fixing them, or if it's just a server config, because I've had I've done literally 30 network installs in the last, 16 months, and there's always something that doesn't work, and it's always something different every time. All web-related stuff. So, it just could be a flakiness issue or what. I'm not sure. But it was a problem at one time. It might still be a problem. Who knows? But it's just something interesting. And all NetBasic scripts would be vulnerable to this. And, of course, default servlets and stuff. 5.1 with SP4. Again, that's IBM WebSphere. Does ship with two particular interesting servlets. It ships with a bunch, but a lot of them are lame and boring, like Hello World stuff. Who cares? The session servlet. What this actually does is if you use the actually internal Java session management where it handles all the session IDs and maintains session state and stuff, and it's under the JavaX, Java extension. If you use the internal Java session management mechanisms, you go to this applet, it'll just spit out all the current actively open session IDs for all of them. So if you're using this legitimately, for a shopping cart application, I pull up this servlet and it gives me a listing of all the session IDs of all the active shopping carts, which, of course, is all you need is to take that session ID and plop it in somewhere else, and bam, you got someone else's account, someone else's shopping cart, that easy. That's not too good. The servlet manager, this is reconfiguring the IBM WebSphere container, doing things like turning off the entire servlet support, loading in additional servlets, maybe malicious. You'd have to be able to upload them somehow first. And even doing fun things, I believe, like you'd be able to redirect the error log so you can say etsy pass, or, well, it's not Unix, sys:\, system autoexec.ncf, whatever interesting file. You say that is now my log file for servlet errors, and then say show me the servlet log, error log, and then be able to view the file and stuff like that. So there are various weird things. It is password protected, but the default username is servlet, and the default password is manager. And that's actually kind of hard-coded in the config that's stuck in the, I think it's one of the .properties Java files. So, and then on the network 6 side of things, it ships with a servlet called Snoop Servlet. Historically, people have said this is a problem. I personally don't see what the really big problem is. It's kind of like a cross-site scripting type thing. A little bit of information disclosure, not a whole hell of a lot. But it's there, and if you think that's a problem and you're worried and concerned about it, then, be concerned about it. And some of the one thing I didn't actually put on the slide, too, is that the Apache Tomcat that also ships with Netware 6 has a bunch of default user accounts installed under the Tomcat server. So there's some things that administrative servlets and stuff that may be protected by username password. There's like three or four actual username password combos that are shipped by default and have various rights and stuff. So, another thing to consider or keep in mind. The NDS object.nlm overflows. Now we're getting a little more interesting, but we're still stuck on sample script issues. Network 5.1 with SP4. Network 5.1 in general ships with this NDS.obj. NLM, which basically allows NDS browsing over the web. Just, hey, you call this and it says, here's my tree, and you click on that, and you start breaking it down into organizations, and you start drilling down just like a file structure, or it's much like browsing the registry on Windows. It just breaks out the entire NDS tree. Only the public components, nothing, horribly bad, but the basic public exposure of the tree. It has a nice, beautiful overflow, 170 characters right after the name, or a bunch in the operation URL parameter. Gives you an A bend, and that A bend shows that EIP is exactly what you need it to be. In this case, the exact characters we gave it. So this is basically a textbook's buffer overflow. No heap crap to worry about, no Unicode, mangling of stuff. I mean, this is literally taken. If you had network shellcode, you plop it in, you run it, you're done. Buffer overflows don't get easier than this. So something to definitely keep in consideration. Now, the one thing that's nice is that I don't know of any existing network shellcode, to actually exploit these things. And, I've worked with NMRC and Simple Nomad and stuff, and they've been at this a way lot longer and understand it a way lot better than I do. And, they've said they've had their hand at it, and it's a lot harder than it looks due to the way that network actually has its memory models and how it manages external libraries and things like that. So if someone's extremely ambitious and wants to have a good, first-in-the-industry impression, make some network shellcode. Have your hand at it. But beyond that, I don't know of any that exists. And, in general, it's really hard. So even though there's buffer overflows, the actual capability of explaining these things may not, I mean, I don't want to say it's not possible because, you know, I'll be proven wrong probably, but I mean, it's, I don't foresee it happening anytime soon. So, but I'm, you know, hopefully someone will make me eat my words, maybe, I don't know, but we'll see. But in general, buffer overflows are not as immediate of a threat as I think that, you know, some other flow overflows are just because of the lack of research in exploitability of actual overflows on network. And of course, Network 6 doesn't ship with the NDS, OBJ, NLM. What's really interesting is that it ships with a configuration file. It ships with the configuration directory with all the supporting graphics and extra stuff, but just lacks the actual one NLM script itself, which means that, you know, it's basically on the install. They just ripped that one file out, but left all the other cruft there, which is kind of weird. You know, they think they remove it all. It's all in the same directory. But in general, it doesn't ship with Network 6, so you don't have to worry about it. Source.jsp file reading. The Tomcat server, this is the view code type of problems, which are plaguing, you know, all kinds of servers and stuff. Tomcat ships with a source.jsp source code browser in its examples, you know, little cluster of files. And, of course, you can use your .././/, tricks to escape out of the web root and read any file on the server. It doesn't actually work with a straight ../. I think it actually checks to see if there's a ... and removes it. But what you can do is use the %2e, which is just the encoding for the dot. So you just %2e/%2e/%2e/, which is just still .././/, encoded, and it works. And here, you know, you can actually then, I have an example where, you know, you can view the etc console.log. And I actually have, you know, if you don't believe me, I'll actually demo it too. You know, where you can just essentially view files. So I'm going to pull up here. Netscape is pulling up the source. I didn't specify a file, so it's not happy. So allow me to type something in really fast when I set on the microphone. All goes to plan. Okay, so there's my console.log, right? This is just, you know, a log of all the various things that are going on in the network console and stuff. So you can see you can just start fetching files. Now what's really interesting is that in here, all these handlers and all kinds of extra stuff kind of run in this weird limbo console stage. They're not running as administrator, but it's like the Windows equivalent of local system. So it's like beyond administrator. It can actually get at some stuff that even probably administrator couldn't get at. So, and there might be a way to tweak some ACLs to keep this from happening, but you can just cruise around and look at any files you want. And of course, you know, reading files, okay, yeah. You can potentially snag the NDS files from the _ network directory. Now, for those of you not familiar with NetWare, NetWare keeps all of, like, the Windows equivalent of its registry and passwords and stuff. It keeps it in this _ network directory, which is actually not normally viewable and accessible going through normal NetWare means. Via, like, you know, just shares and directories and stuff. But it keeps all these various files in there, and that's what, you know, essentially username, passwords, and all the other internal configuration options. And essentially also equivalent to Windows SAM. Now, we all know you don't want to give out your SAM file because then they pop it into Loftcrack and then crack your passwords and you have everything, right? Well, this is the exact same stuff. And using the source viewer, you know, source.jsp, you actually can request those files. The problem is source.jsp does do a little bit of mangling and adds a little bit of HTML to header and footer. You might be able to strip that out and get it back to its raw binary format because these files are binary gobbledygook. So there's a potential to possibly download the NDS files there, but you might have to do a little bit of reconstructive surgery to make sure they go back the way they were supposed to be. But still a concern, seeing how I'm doing on time here. Okay, so let's move on to the NetBasic handler. Let me get a drink. It's really interesting. They've got a bunch of closed beers up here. And I don't know if they're encouraging the speakers to drink while they're talking or what, but it's weird. Anyway, okay, the NSN handler. I talked about in the beginning how NSN is just a mapped handler and stuff. What's interesting about this one, normally it comes with a bunch of, you know, samples, NetBasic scripts, you know, big deal. They're in this, you know, the NSN/web directory. And supposedly anything you request is only limited to that directory. Now, it also comes with a bunch of actually usable utility NetBasic scripts. They're in a non-accessible web directory in the /nsn/util directory. Now, these do more various things as far as just various utility functions for managing a network server, adding users, and, you know, just doing cool things. What's interesting with the NSN handler is that, again, you can use some ... tricks to escape out of the web root and start executing arbitrary NetBasic scripts plopped anywhere on the server. You know, this is a really bad problem if you have, let's say, a public folder where people can upload files. They upload a, you know, malicious .bas file, and they use this trick to go in and go in that folder and execute it. But of course, you know, even focusing on just what's given in the utilities in the util directory, there's some pretty interesting stuff that you can play in there too, and I've given a couple examples here. Now, the trick to calling these things is, if you use a ... /\, Netscape will stop you and say file not found. If you use a ... /\, Netscape will say bad request. If you use a ... and then an encoded ... Netscape will stop you and say bad request. Or if you use a ... encoded \, which is the %5c, it works. So it's like, oh, forgot one of the four. What you're doing is your ...\, and then util, but you encode the \. And of course, NetWare is a little bit like Windows. They actually use \s for the directory delimiters, unlike Unix, which is \\. So you can use \\ or \s in a web request, and internally it all gets mapped into a \. So unlike Unix, where you can't use \s to play around with directory games, on Windows and NetWare you can actually do that. It gives you an extra avenue of potential exploitation. You know, so, I mean, I can give you examples. Now, of course, I actually have a NetWare running in VMware, so I'm actually exploiting a real server here. I'll show you the fact that there is a bunch of cool, interesting stuff in the NetBasic directory. Give this a second to load up here. Okay, I'm just using a cheapy little DOS equivalent shell. So you see there's lots of scripts. That's all I want to show you. Now, I'm not going to sit here and enumerate all of them, you know, because that's just kind of a complete waste of time. I've gone through and found a couple interesting ones. Let's pop out of here. You know, and I'll just show you the types of things that are could be a problem. So let's just pull up our... Let's wait for the NSN handler to load. You know, it's one of those whole things where the first use takes a little bit longer to load. So S-list, which is just the server list. Not a big deal. There's only one server on my entire VMware network. Not a problem, but, you know, information disclosure. Then you have things like DS Browse, which is NDS browsing. So if I typed it right, and all is well, and we give it a second. So I'll pull it up. Okay, so now we start getting enumerations of, you know, the NDS tree. Now, the one thing I don't know, I haven't figured out yet with this exploit, doesn't mean it's not possible, but I'm just not aware of it by the time I presented, was that you can pass command line parameters to enumerate larger portions and be recursive and do even more cooler things. I haven't figured out how to pass command line parameters, but if someone was to figure that out, they can do even more interesting things with these commands. But I just, you know, just kind of show you the types of things that you can do, you know, that are available to attackers when they're playing with these types of stuff. So here's a, you know, a directory enumeration just going on down the line, you know, all the stuff on the sys volume. You know, so you can access these scripts. There's a lot more that do even, you know, potentially worse things. I'm not going to sit there and look through, you know, there's a good 30 or 40. I poked through the ones that had interesting names. There's a couple obtuse ones, and they work and don't work for various reasons. There's a couple NetBasic scripts that want Windows GUI interface stuff, right, which isn't provided via the web parameter, so those scripts just puke out automatically. So you can't use those. And there's other BAS scripts scattered, you know, throughout the OS and other NetBasic type related directories. So, I mean, the sky's the limit as far as what's available on there. And if you can upload your own stuff, it's definitely a concern. But in general, I mean, it's possible and it's there. Using ... tricks to access stuff out of web roots is nothing really new. But the thing to consider here is that we've moved from, like, these sample scripts installed and here's how to abuse them. The solution is always easy there. Just delete the darn sample scripts, and you won't have any of these things. So we're off of sample script problems. Now we're into the handler itself, right? You know, it doesn't matter what sample scripts, and if you remove all the sample scripts, the handler now has a bug that lets me go over and do all kinds of bad things regardless. So, you know, we're kind of at a next level, if you will. So, you know, let's go into a bigger level, but we'll stay with the same handler. It also has a buffer overflow. Now, unlike the NDS OBJ to NLM, which only exists on certain platforms, and if they delete it, then it's not a problem anymore. This is overflow in the handler itself. Again, you know, throw 230 characters as a module name, and you have on network 5.1 SP4, clean, nice stack smash. EIP is completely owned by what you passed it, so you can, you know, basically tell the computer to execute whatever code wherever it is. So, you know, your textbook case for doing your basic buffer overflow. At network 6, however, it does A-bend, and it does break stuff, but it's not enough to reach EIP. So it's not exploitable on network 6 beyond just a potential denial of service with getting the server to constantly A-bend, which if you don't have set up to automatically handle, which network 6 doesn't by default, could be a potential problem. And I'll illustrate a little later. I don't want to puke the server now because then I can't do demos later on. So I'll puke the server at the end. And of course, this, you know, being the other one, this is the one I was told that was just publicly released like in the past week too, which kind of sucks because this is the fun one. The Perl handler is pretty much equivalent to having Perl in your CGI bin. Basically, you can give it arbitrary Perl scripts uploaded on the fly to execute. You can say, here's my Perl program, run it for me on the server, would you? And, you know, you just upload it by a post request, and there you go. You can run whatever you want. Now, you know, the exploitability of this is basically limited by your Perl skills. Now, of course, there's a lot of people, you know, a lot of hacker types, Perl sucks. Yeah, well, you know, if you knew Perl, you could exploit this. So it's like, finally, something I can do. You know, I know Perl. So, you know, yet another reason to know Perl. It's easy, and sometimes it comes in handy. Just the fact that you can upload arbitrary Perl code, and again, this is kind of operating on a whole local system / console thing, so you can play and modify and do what you want to do. And you know, I'll give you a couple examples. I wrote a little exploit program thingy here as an example of to automate a lot of the code writing and stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and run it here. I got to put the microphone down so I can type. Cute little upload code.pl. So what I'm going to do is actually upload code to go into, let's upload code. I'll write code right now live code writing on screen, to go ahead and add an extra line to the network startup script. Now, network admins and stuff, I'll go ahead and show you what that script is like, and I'll prove that it wasn't already rigged and done. So, I gotta remember what it is. Oh no, Alzheimer's setting in early is what it is. So, yep, I puked the request, hang on. This is the cute little graphical edit program. System. I got time to kill, so this is really what these demos are supposed to do. It's just, you know, keep you entertained by moving pretty colors and me typing. So, all right, so there's the file, and I'll go to the end, and that's the end of the file. You know, my last line is this load network 5 idle, which is actually just a one-line tweak for VMware, because network under VMware doesn't give back unused CPU cycles, so if you don't load this extra idle module, VMware just sucks up the entire CPU and doesn't give anything back to the host OS. So you have to trick network into playing nice under VMware. So, file's fine. I have to escape out of it. Now let's go ahead and let's do something evil here with our little Perl thing. So I'm going to write some code. You can probably see it at the bottom of the screen. I know it's kind of faded, but bear with me. And if all goes according to plan, when I go in and now edit this file and cross my fingers, and there we see my line was added. So the next time this server is restarted, load evil.nlm, whatever that would be. And of course, you know, I can put in whatever. The biggest one being load our console with a static password being whatever password I chosen, and in which case then turns on basically telnet access equivalent, our console access, to the network server so I can get in. Now, you know, editing this file is, you know, fine. Yeah, you throw them in there. Next time the server reboots, who knows when that's going to be? Do you have a way to force the server to reboot? Maybe via Perl you can down it and reboot and stuff. I don't know. I haven't really looked into it that much because I didn't really care all that much. You're editing system configuration files at this point. You know, that simple, that easy. Now, the other thing I remember I was talking about, whole having access to that NDS file, where all the username and passwords are saved. Having access to that, there are cracking utilities for it. Pandora from NMRC actually cracks Network 4 and Network 5. I don't think it'll crack 6 yet, right? Yeah, it won't crack 6 yet. Maybe they'll add that feature now that there's a more reason to have that feature. Don't know. But in general, I mean, there are possibilities for offline crackers pretty much in your loft crack style. So I just want to show you then, you know, you can just as easily download the SAM file, essentially the password file. So I just requested the NDS.01 file. It's not there in the web directory. So now let's go to my cute little uploader thing. I wrote a small little script. I'll show it to you so you don't think I'm pulling wool over your eyes. All right, if you see the script on the bottom, all I do is open out the NDS file and open it up in the web roots, and then just copy all the contents over. Basically, all I'm doing is making a copy. But Perl doesn't have a cute little one-line function for copy. You have to open a file and open another file and read from here and write into there, you know, constantly until they're all done. So that's all this script is doing. It's just opening the two files, and while I'm reading from one, writing into the other, and then closing them and being done. So this is just going to copy, hopefully, the NDS file from the hidden, you know, registry directory into the web root directory where we can download it. So let's run my cute little Perl upload, and I've got a cheat so I can have upload pre-made external files. So, and there we go. So done. Now, if I go over here, and hopefully if I request this, this is the whole, it's about 1 meg NDS SAM file, you know, equivalent. All the username and passwords are embedded in there. If you scroll down, it'll go through the gobbledygook, as well as server config, system accounts, all that stuff. Just like downloading the entire Windows registry, you know, and you can go in and tweak and modify values and do all that stuff. So, you know, pretty uncool stuff, you know, and please understand, you can essentially own the server by using these tricks. You know, this upload arbitrary Perl thing, the server's yours. You can shut down, unload NLMs, load malicious ones, upload arbitrary code, upload scripts, modify system configs, download passwords, you know, put in Trojan NLMs. So you can download the dev kits for all the NetWare stuff online off novell.com. It's all free to be able to compile and write your own NLMs. So, I mean, pretty much the sky's the limit, and you have full reign on the system. So this is a big problem. You know, you definitely just don't want to leave it there. So, of course, you know, we've got these big problems, and, you know, some of them are scary, and the cross-site scripting ones aren't fine. Well, I mean, mitigating them is not too tough. Again, sample scripts, delete them. You don't need them there. I mean, they're not doing a whole lot of anything anyway. I had one client, and only one client in my entire life who made an application based around a sample script. Right? And so they had to leave one of, like, the view code sample scripts there because they were using it for something stupid. They made their own IDE around it. But beyond that, you should be able to blow away all those sample scripts. No one should be using them. You know, why people don't do that off the bat, I don't know. So, but delete the sample scripts. Unmap all the handlers, you know, preferably all of them, but, you know, a better way to phrase that is all of them that you're not using. You know, if you're using that basic and stuff, then you're kind of between a rock and a hard place because you depend on the functionality, which, of course, has vulnerabilities in it. And then, you know, it's a matter of getting a patch. But as for my workaround, just unload all those handlers and, you know, it's not a problem. Question? In that original configuration file, way back in, it was slide 5, I showed all the SP directories are mapped to this and the NSN directories are mapped to that. If you're really concerned, I have a little time, so I'll go ahead and show you what the exact config files look like and what you'd have to change. So let me just load those up. All right, so here we see the Apache module. I don't want to focus on this one because everyone knows Apache, so let's look straight into the Netscape one. Here's the Netscape file. And let me make this a little more readable here. All right. Okay, so as you can see, is all these extensions, you'll start seeing them here. Like, here's all the .asp and .nsp extensions. Just uncomment out these lines. Here are all the other loads for the other extensions. Again, uncomment out these lines. If you don't need that support, comment it out, restart the server, and you won't have that functionality anymore. You won't have those vulnerabilities anymore. And the Novonix sweet spot, then like your HPS- your server name, conf directory, your typical Netscape enterprise configuration files, nothing fancy, nothing unique about this stuff. It's all, you know, simple. If you're a Netscape app a Netscape admin, an iPlanet admin. This is all old hat. It's all standard out-of-the-box stuff. It's just a matter of going in the config file and looking at it and removing all the stuff. Now, granted, Windows gives you a nice GUI where you can uncheck the IDC handler and remove the IDA handler. Here you have to be mundane and edit a text file. How bad is that? No GUI stuff. But, still, just comment out those lines. Put a little pound sign, the little hash or whatever you call it in your language, in those lines. Huh? Yes, you could do that. Just write a cute little Perl script that goes in and cleans up all the configs. Here, there you go. There's an idea for the next Novell Nimda worm. It'll go in, exploit the bugs, and clean up after itself and secure them. So that'd be a good bug. I'd allow that in my network. Let the worm in, and it'll automatically fix you. And then it'll leave and not, constantly propagate out. It may suck up your bandwidth, but at least you're secure afterwards. Hey, there's an idea. So that's a possibility. Who knows? Maybe I'll do that for fun. So we'll see. But the Apache config is pretty much similar. If you're an Apache admin, if you play with the config files and you know exactly how to go in, just do searches. Just grep for NSN and go through and you'll find the exact spots where the NSN handler's loaded. You look at all the virtual directories and virtual mappings and the script aliases in your Apache config, and you can fix those just as easily. So, not rocket science. It's not very hard. You just have to pull up the config file, make some modifications, restart the server, and away you go. So, get out of there. Let's go back to the presentation. And, of course, one thing that's, got to make sure you do, network 6. And network 5, whatever, when you ABEND, it says, hey, I had a critical error, not cool. I wrote the results of the ABEND log, just thought you'd like to know, and I shut down all the bad apps. If it was a hugely, hugely, bad ABEND, that core system couldn't continue, it gives you a blue screen equivalent of, hey, really bad processor shut down, can't continue, I'm puking and exiting. With Network 6, by default, at least on the installations I have, when it's something ABENDs, even if it's just a minor, teeny tiny, who cares about it, userland app program, CGI script, this ABEND log comes up, stops the entire server, and says, whoa, bad stuff happened. User, should I, write this to a log? Do you just want to quit? Do you want to, scream in panic and fear? Gives you this cute little menu option. But the thing is, it stops all processes in that state. So, great little denial of service. If you can cause even a trivial ABEND and the admin wasn't smart enough to go in and configure it so that ABENDs are automatically handled and logged and done with and don't interrupt the rest of the services, great denial of service. Because something to puke, it takes, everything is now off limits. And it won't work until someone R-consoles or gets on the console and says yes to that damn little menu thing for the server to continue. So, and I'll go ahead and show that to you because that was the whole NSN handler overflow. So let's see if we can overflow it. I'll show you an ABEND here and exactly what I'm talking about. So, I got a little ambitious in my buffer overflow. Way too big of a buffer. Or way too big of an overflow. So in the meantime, let's go over okay, so here we go. ABEND. Here's our little network. I'm puking. Okay, press S, Y, or X to continue, please. And the problem is here. Now, if you go do web requests and stuff, things are not going to be responding. Because, if you look right here, it says encountered a code in the server.nlm. Right? The core functioning server. So, everything is stopped at this point. Everything is suspended. Does the R-console function? I don't know. I bet it probably doesn't. So you might actually need physical access to the machine to actually say yes here. But, I'm told it's a good practice admin thing to go in and set it up so ABENs are automatically handled. And I assume that, and that's a no-brainer move. But this is what happens when you don't. And unfortunately, this is default. So I hit my S here, and things go back to normal. And of course, I have to hit another key after S. Yes, do you really want to do that? And now things are finally running. That module is done, and the ABAN log now has a whole bunch of stuff as far as what was overflowed and the stack traces and all those things. Which also I want to add, too, for those actually doing research and being ambitious and trying to write network shellcode, network actually has embedded, included debuggers. It's like, what is it, left shift, right shift, control, do a spin and chant something, and you can pull up a debugger. It's a weird key combo that's not normal, but you can pull up an entire debugger and get stack dumps and, you know, poke and read registry and all kinds of other stuff. So, you know, it's not like you need soft ice to throw on top of network to be able to do this stuff. It comes with free soft ice for everyone if you, you know, get network or soft ice equipped. And what's really, really, really cool is that web remote manager console I was telling you about running on port 8008, 8009 have a web GUI version of the debugger. You can do memory dumps, stack traces, and all that stuff over the web. So you don't even need console access anymore. It's really weird, but yeah, it's all there. I mean, I think it's actually really cool and really functional. But it's just really strange that, you know, it's like I never debugged a system using an HTTP interface. That was a first for me. So, you know, definitely interesting stuff. All right, so going back to the presentation. So, you know, those are the workarounds. Now, of course, again, what happens if you're actually using these things? You're using the Perl handler or using the NetBasic handler. A simple workaround of removing the handler entirely is not going to work. Well, you know, I've all these problems, I've told Novell, you know, over a month ago, like mid to late June, I believe, is when it was. And, you know, they said a lot of them are, some of them are already fixed, particularly in the NetWare 6 SP1 already, which was out. And the ones that weren't fixed, they were going to fix in that support pack. And so support pack was due out early mid-August, you know, so relatively around now or coming up. And the support pack 2 betas are already out. And those may or may not fix some of the problems. Hopefully they do. But in general, I mean, there's patches. Novell's working on it, so it's not like you're stuck. But of course, you know, I mean, I'm being kind of vague on it because I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on. So what I'm going to actually do is actually invite Ed Reed, who is the security manager or the security czar for Novell, who's actually in charge now of all of this, and he's going to kind of go over exactly what patches are coming out when and some other fun security things going on at Novell. So let me go ahead and pass the mic to him.
Thank you, sir. I would introduce myself to those of you who don't know me. I was with Novell for about 5 years, up until about 2.5 years ago, and rejoined Novell at the end of June. And one of the first things that they did when they put me into the slot was to talk about vulnerability response processes, and would you please answer RFP's questions? So, so that's why I'm here today. We're recognizing that things have changed. We're not an IPX shop. In fact, as you point out, debugging things over HTTP, the motto inside Novell has been, we've got to be able to do everything right over HTTP. I just don't know if they quite intended that. But certainly, It's time for us all to move on and to change the business as usual process for Novell. And so we're really announcing today that we will begin publishing security alerts through BugTrack, through CERT, and through other places that you inform us in general need to be published to. We'll consider additions to that list. We have created a new website that's online today at support.novell.com/security-alerts, and would encourage you to take a look at that. What you'll find there is a list of some of the patches which have been published recently or which are coming back in in response to alerts that we've seen within the last 30 to 60 days or so, sorted by products. I don't think I'm doing that. Is the battery? Okay. sorted by products. And if you get a chance, I don't know if you've got wireless here or not. All right, no. So we can't show it to you here, but you can take a look at it. So we'll switch over to this mic instead. Included on that page is a new class of thing that you can tell us. There have been defect reporting processes and customer input requests for new features, of course, customer problem submit mechanisms. Now there is a vulnerability issue support insert mechanism so that you can tell us about your vulnerabilities. We don't yet have our PGP key up there, but we will try to have that up within the next day or two for you to use, so that you can tell us about vulnerabilities, and we will strive as we continue improving the process to make it so that you can track that progress with us as we work to resolve the issue and get the feedback back to you. We've created a cross-functional team internally that I'm the head of. That cross-functional team includes worldwide support processes, worldwide support services, who is actually driving the actual execution of the business process. Includes representatives from the BizOps, who are folks who help out the system moderators, or the moderators of the various different NetNews moderated groups that provide informal customer support. Product management, product engineering, public relations, legal, and you'll see their input to the process here in a few minutes. And we're putting new processes into place to make sure that we're capturing for tracking vulnerabilities as they are reported to us. You can provide us with the information through the Security Alerts website or email to secure@novell.com. And as I say, there is a PGP key for secure at the MIT PGP key ring, key server, and we'll be posting that to the website as well so that you can provide us information in a secure fashion. In addition, the folks that work with the SysOps will be able to feed us inputs and as well as customer calls, normal support vehicles, our own IS&T, and from what we find on people's websites. I'm going to let you read the policies text here yourself and say that we're trying very hard to be reasonable in terms of acknowledging that we want to provide you with as much information as we responsibly can, as soon as we can. And generally that means as soon as we know what the fix or the workaround is, to be able to tell you. We will strive not to tell you about exploits that are either theoretically or practically not possible to defend against. And we will strive not to tell you about exploits which may severely impact other competitors in things as well. We, from time to time, hear from people that are like CERT, who have vendor liaisons, that there's a problem they're familiar with, and they're working the problem, and they want to make sure the vendors know about the problem and have fixes ready for it, and nobody talks about it until vendors have had a reasonable amount of time, which the CERT defines to be 45 days, to get their act together before they go public with the exploit code. So we will support those efforts as in our attempt to be good citizens of the community. We have to reserve the right to decide what to tell and what not to tell. That's just the way this world works. So we can't stand up here and promise to tell you everything. What we can do is to reassure you that we're here to try to help our customers secure their environments. And that's really what we're striving to do. It is ultimately the customer's responsibility to secure their customers' environments. And we see as an important part of our responsibility to help customers be able to do that. We don't commit to ship bug-free code, but we do commit to try to be responsible for it. So that's the list as it appears on the website this morning, various different exploits and things. And those links are all links to TIDs, technical information documents that include the patches to be downloaded. And since our internal SEs have started finding out about this website, we're busy flushing the backlog, if you will. And it is likely that you will see an unusual number suddenly of these things showing up, because we haven't done this before. The TIDs have been out there, but people have had the devil's own time figuring out how to find them. And now we're about making it easier for people to find these things. And so there is going to be an increased degree of visibility and awareness of these things. And we don't think that's a bad thing. We just think that's recognition of the work that we've been doing to take care of problems up to now, and now doing a better job at communicating with customers. The CSP8, which is the Consolidated Support Pack release that has been in beta and is getting ready to come out, I'm hearing may release Monday or Tuesday. So it sounds like it's good to go next week, unless there are some new showstoppers hit. And they apply to a lot of these issues that had been identified, particularly the information disclosure and the cross-site scripting issues, by, guess what, deleting those files if they're installed, right? And suggesting that you not reinstall them on production systems, because, again, this is largely about the sample code that's out there to show people how to do it. And we're revving this TID that I cite here to say this in English for administrators as well. As we get to some of the more entertaining things that RFP came up with for us to talk about, the NDS login brute force attack that was mentioned, I think we could sit around and discuss whether or not the NDS login lockout, password lockout mechanism, would help keep the dictionary attacks from occurring. But we do recognize that as soon as you have some sort of an intruder detect user lockout mechanism, that in itself constitutes a denial of service opportunity, right? Because if you can take out individual users or systems along those lines, you can certainly become annoying. And there may be things that we can do to improve that. We'll take a look at it. As far as some of these session servlet and servlet manager issues, I've created some new issues for us to track internally so that we can take a look at and understand, you know, whether access controls are being applied appropriately, whether there's a CH root mechanism that we can use to try to keep people from crawling around outside of the server routes that they're supposed to be working in. And quite frankly, I don't know yet. We're taking a look at those. I think the advice that we got here, which was to unmap the handlers if you're not using them, is a good start. I really like the Perl execution problem. And I'm going to be spending some time tomorrow on that one. Unmap it if you're not using it, please. On some of these others, as you see, we've opened a few additional issues to track with engineering to identify what the nature of that problem is and try to work through those. Legal has to contribute something to a process like this. And I guess it is kind of interesting to consider the need for this in light of some of Mr. Clark's remarks yesterday. But this speaks for itself. As for questions and comments, by all means, use the secure@novell.com email address and take a look at the new website when you get a chance. That's it.
I want to thank Ed for and Novell for sending him out. And just so you know, it's like I came up with this wacky idea. Ed emailed me maybe 2 weeks ago, a little bit over 2 weeks. He's like, you know, I'm now the new point of contact and stuff, and I'm going to be helping with your issues. And so last Friday, I'm like, hey, you want to come to Vegas and come up on stage? So Novell was able to turn around, you know, in how many days? You know, like 5 days, you know, they turned around and got a plane and got them out here, and they got all this stuff up and running, like, okay, we'll try to commit to getting it done, and they were able to do it, you know, which is pretty impressive, and what they're trying to do is pretty impressive. I know some people are like, you know, it's about time, you know, they're getting up to speed, but looking at what it really is and what it's going to provide, particularly for the NetWare field, you know, that's a big step. So, you know, I'm glad and I'm really excited that they're doing that, and I'm really thankful that Ed and Novell were able to come out and talk about it, so. So, you know, we're kind of coming up on the last 5 minutes here. So, you know, any really big immediate questions? And I want to say big, because if they're small, talk to me later, because I have a couple more small announcements that'll take up that last 5 minutes. So anything that's a burning desire that has to be answered right now? So, no? Okay. So now, of course, all this stuff is going to be on my website, wiretrip.net. I'll give a copy of the PPT to the Black Hat folks. So we've got about 5 more minutes here. And I want to wait. There's more. We got some more stuff. It's the day of announcements. So I'm going to go ahead and turn over my mic here to some other people that are going to be talking about some other fun, interesting things that I'm involved in, other people are involved in that, you know, it's not necessarily network-related stuff, but it's going to be cool community impact big things. So with that ado, I'll turn it over to Steve Manswick from the Vuln Watch moderator. So.
Hey, how's it going? As most of you know, I'm the one of the moderators of Vuln Watch. And we've got a few announcements again this year. You know, last year, RFP was kind enough to let us announce the list at the end of his talk. And today we're going to announce another list. We're launching Vuln Discuss, we're calling it. And, you know, just like the name hints, it's essentially a discussion list around the vulnerabilities that you're going to see announced on Vuln Watch. You know, we found a lot of people do want to discuss vulnerabilities and, you know, discuss the alerts that are posted, and we don't allow any of that on Vuln Watch. So this now gives a forum for people to discuss that. We've also added some moderators. I'm not sure if David Litchfield's in the room here. I didn't see him. He's one of the moderators we've added, and we'll be announcing over the next few days some more moderators, probably, I believe, 2 or 3 more. The other, probably the big thing and probably the most important thing other than, you know, just another mailing list, we've started the Internetwork Security Information Services Initiative. And essentially what this is, it's a formal partnership between a few open source type groups, namely Vuln Watch, PacketStorm, the open source, open source vulnerability database project, and the ALDOS web defacement mirror. We're going to be continue on with the not-for-profit, vendor-neutral, but, you know, completely voluntary organization. So if anyone here has got some spare time and wants to help out, hey, let me know. You know, shoot us an email. We'll gladly take the help. Essentially, what we're going to be doing is sharing resources between all of the different projects in a central location. So instead of having to run over to, you know, 5 or 6 different sites to get what you need, you'll be able to go to one spot and get everything. And we're all going to cooperate and work together. Probably the biggest impact out of this is the Open Source Vulnerability Database Project. And I'm going to turn that over here to Charl to talk about the next slide there.
Hi, everyone. I'm Charl. If you come to me afterwards, I'll tell you how to spell that. From SensePost, if you come to me afterwards, I'll tell you how to spell that also. I was asked to speak a little bit about the OSVDB. That's the Open Source Vulnerability Database Project, which we're launching today. Essentially, the background to this project is that we want to launch completely open source for the community, by the community, free access database of vulnerability information. It's about as simple as that. The background to it is that SensePost, myself, and H.D. Moore from Digital Defense and some other guys had been building databases like this to assist us in the work that we do. And we figured it would make much more sense if we all got together and worked together. It would improve the quality of the data, ultimately help us do better work. So that's pretty much what's driving it. A whole lot of guys are involved, RFPs involved, Eric Parker from MindSec, the guys from cert.net, Steve over here, and a few other guys. If I've forgotten anyone, then I'm sorry. All these names. Basically, the status of where we are now is the website has been launched. We've pretty much clarified the concept, so we know what we want to do. Got a whole lot of the key players involved. At the moment, we're busy discussing the structure of the database, how it would all fit together, how it would link up to things like CVE and other databases, Nessus and their database. Once we've got that organized, we'll build the database, and then we'll complete building the front ends over which the vulnerability database can be accessed and through which you'll be able to submit the your submissions, I guess. And so we just want to encourage you to check the site out. That's the osvdb.org, and to give us your support. Any questions or comments, I think you can give them now, or you can join the list. What's that? That's
it's on the website.
Yeah, it'll be on the website, osvdb.org. And join in. Are there any questions now, I think?
Great. All right, so, you know, kind of the whole thing with the whole VulnDiscuss and the ISIS initiative and the OSBDB is this whole, we have a lot of people privately and individually doing a lot of work. And the problem is, like, when it comes to vulnerability databases, maintaining a vuln database is a lot of work. I mean, Security Focus has an entire, you know, company built around that, you know, single fact. So, I mean, having everyone recreate, just reinventing the wheel and doing their own DB and populating and populating and populating five times over is nuts, because if they just join forces, that's one-fifth that the work that each one has to do, and you got a little more redundancy and failover and more people involved, and it'll scale better. So, you know, that's kind of what encouraged all this, and a lot of people are hopping on board because, you know, all the people involved pretty much had or were going to have private vulnerability databases being built. So we decided, screw it, let's just make one big one, we'll all cooperate. And the key thing here is that it's not owned by anyone, and it's not going to be sold. And when I say the information's free, I mean literally free. And we're not even talking like, you know, browsing a web interface search free. We're talking like download CSVs and MySQL table dumps free. Like, you get the literal entire database, SQL statements, data raw and all. And in all of that, you know, there's a lot of process involved as far as feeding in from VulnWatch, being populated into the database, having links straight to PacketStorm for the exploits, and links like NeoHapsis archives straight to the reference posts, other people donating information and cross-referencing, and we've got like a ton, two dozen, three dozen volunteers, you know, online for entering in the information. And I just, you know, I really want to comment, though, this is not just like a cool idea that's probably going to fall on the floor. The scheme is done. The data is already coming in. The base population data is coming in from SensePost and DDI. They're volunteering what they already have, which is their full databases already. And we've got the people on board. The website's up. The servers are in place. And things are definitely cruising. And all of this came about in like 10 days, you know, from start to where we're at. So, yeah, we're only 10 days into it, but we have a lot to show for 10 days. And, you know, and give us another week, and we're probably going to have something for you to actually start accessing and using. You know, we're going to cooperate with Aldis and PacketStorm and start having mirrors and propagating the data out. We're not about containing or controlling the data. We're just about getting it into one place and getting it organized so that anyone who wants to can get at it and use it. And if you have anything, that time or help, you know, to donate, resources to donate, or if your company wants to even do interesting things like provide mappings, you know, between your product and like CVE stuff. I mean, we can incorporate all that. Just definitely contact us and let us know. There's lots of room. You know, and even if your corporation wants to reuse the database, we're not stopping it. Hey, if someone wants to download the CSV dump and then resell the data as alerts or the access to a corporate database, which is just the same thing, fine. We're not going to stop that because the data is free. We just like to think anyone trying to resell the data that anyone can get for free is not going to work. And that's the concept behind it. So, you know, that's why we're not worried about giving it out for free and people making money off of it, because, you know, unless they add something on top of it, there's no value added there that they can make money on. So that's pretty much my time. I'm like 2 minutes over, so I think I'll be flogged. But, you know, if any questions, you know, just go ahead and either email the individual people for the OSVDB or the ISIS initiative, or Ed, the secure@novell.com, or you can email me, or you can contact me right after, you know, come on up and talk to me after this. And of course, any feedback, like I said, on business cards and stuff, you just want to bring them up and drop them off. As an incentive, I'll trade you, I'll give you my business card, which is cool and glossy and looks pretty, right? If you give me a card for yours, even if you didn't write comments, I want business cards. So anyone who gives me a card, I'll trade them. So thank you very much for coming, and I hope you enjoyed it.